partnership with NDTA, this podcast focuses on energy resilience. It includes insights and commentary from both U.S. defense and industry. Its moderator, Guy Boer, poses questions concerning the future of energy resilience to three very qualified defense and industry energy experts. Together, they have over 100 years of experience in the field of energy. Panel members include Senior Executive Dave Kless, Deputy Commander of Defense Logistics Agency for Energy, Mr. Todd Foley, Head of Government and Investor Relations, Zeta Energy, Mr. Eric Limpeacher, Chief Innovations Officer, Mach Industries, and Mr. Ben Taylor, Product Manager, Independence Hydrogen.
So, gentlemen, thanks for participating in this podcast today on energy resilience in the Department of Defense. Crude today was reported the highest in the last 10 months at $95 a barrel, estimated to go to $100 a barrel. Today, OSD Industrial Policy announced a commercial agreement to reopen King Mountain Lithium Mine in North Carolina at a cost of $90 million. There have been kinetic attacks on private and public utility infrastructures, and intelligence services would allow you to believe that we're combating thousands of cyber attacks a day. So the real question is, are we still in the competition phase with near-peer competitors, or are we in the conflict phase? So my first question to each one of you is, what can your organization do to make DoD more energy resilient? Todd, the mic's yours.
Thanks, Guy. Zeta Energy, which is a U.S. company headquartered in Houston, is developing immediate next-generation advanced lithium-sulfur batteries. And these batteries, I think, offer a huge benefit in terms of military resilience, but also civilian resilience and reliability. What's novel about these batteries, and I think that why it's so important for what we're doing, is that our batteries are made entirely with domestic feedstocks and no inputs from China. Right now, 90% of batteries or components incorporate key materials or are entirely made in China. And that's obviously a big problem these days. Our batteries are actually higher performing, longer lasting, safer, and much cheaper because we use these lithium and sulfur domestic feedstocks. And that's a game changer. And the application of these batteries is, you know, is really pretty widespread across the board. It's a battery chemistry that's been long understood, but we've overcome some key technological hurdles that enable its use in EVs, for instance, for grid power backup, as well as a host of military and commercial applications, really across the board from drones to missiles to vehicles, and even our infantry, Marines and soldiers. Our batteries are lightweight, longer lasting, and so on. So this is a very important innovation. It's domestic. We enable U.S. leadership in advanced batteries. We displace the need for reliance on Chinese products. And then I think the batteries, because of the chemistry, will go a long way to enhancing resilience and better performance of a lot of military systems.
Thanks, Todd. Ben, how about you?
Thanks, Scott. Independence Hydrogen is a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business. 70% of us are military veterans. We're a Virginia-based company. We produce and distribute hydrogen in a local farm-to-table business model. So unlike most of the hydrogen on the market today, which is produced using fossil fuels, liquefied, and transported long distance across the country, we do local production for local distribution. We're tech neutral. So our first plant in Virginia is a waste gas recycling using a waste stream off of chlorine production to purify it to fuel cell grade and then distribute locally to customers. We are getting into the electrolyzer business and understanding the market dynamics and commercialization of that. To your question about what we can do for DoD, today we are producing hydrogen that we can deliver to DoD bases for transportation uses. In Department of Energy's pathways to commercial liftoff, they talk about forklifts being on the leading edge of transportation. There's forklifts using hydrogen today. That leading edge will grow to heavy-duty trucking, shipping, aviation in the future. Tomorrow, in the near future, our tech-neutral production pathways could be put on military bases to start building grid resiliency, backup power systems. You can use hydrogen to back up critical infrastructure and a host of other uses. And you can do that using the resources of the base, whether that's solar or wind or even fossil fuel with carbon capture. You can do that on basis and produce energy right there on the military basis. And then we have a vision for a long-term view of a national strategic hydrogen reserve where you can produce enough hydrogen and store it on military bases that you're really providing this strategic energy resiliency for DOD, for the U.S. government, and it becomes the kind of like the strategic oil reserve of the 21st century.
Thanks, Ben. Eric, how about you?
Thanks, Guy. I'm Eric Klimpacher from Mach Industries. We're a defense tech startup developing a hydrogen family of systems for the Department of Defense. So that's both the logistics solutions as well as advanced platforms. We're headquartered in Austin, Texas, and have an office in Boston, Massachusetts. We're developing austere hydrogen production systems to address contested logistics challenges for both Class 3, you know, petroleum, as well as Class 5 ammunition logistics. We're also developing hydrogen fuel platforms to dramatically enhance the performance of unmanned systems and guns. You know, the analogy is from World War I to World War II, armies across the world started adopting petroleum as a new fuel. And now with hydrogen, especially with electrification, we see dramatic advantages from both logistics and platforms capabilities to benefit the DoD. Right. So things like distributed fuel logistics, being able to produce hydrogen at both local and regional scales, even at the tactical level, resilient fuel production and fuel storage, low signature fuel logistics, avoiding the use of batteries by switching to hydrogen on certain platforms. By combusting hydrogen and oxygen, you can provide certain benefits in terms of avoiding solid propellant for projectiles and the ability to manufacture munitions in theater. And then, you know, dramatically improved operational capabilities. So increasing mission endurance for both battery and petroleum fuel platforms by 3x, you know, increasing kinetic range of guns by 3x, reducing thermal and acoustic signatures, you know, doubling ammo capacity, you know, developing sonic thrust for small platforms, austere launch of satellite alternatives like balloons, you know, a wide range of tactical and operational capabilities that are, you know, only possible if you switch to an alternate fuel. Hydrogen enables all those capabilities if you have it in, you know, in your supply system.
Thanks, Eric. Mr. Kless.
Thank you. I'm going to touch on four focus areas that DLA and specifically DLA Energy is pursuing in terms of energy resilience to support DOD. Utilities privatization, installation energy, micronuclear reactor pilot programs, and sustainable aviation fuels. So utility privatization began in the 90s and is not new. It was designed to obtain safe, reliable, technologically current, and environmentally sound utility systems at a lower cost than government ownership. Using this privatization process, military installations shift from a role of owner of these operations to a smart utility service customer. As we all know, existing installation infrastructure and systems are unsustainable. And many of the military services utility systems are already well beyond their useful lives. So utilities privatization results in increased energy efficiencies, resilience, and conservation. Most recently, our utility services supported the Navy with its second contract for water and wastewater at Naval Air Station Pax River. Installation Energy offers acquisition support for renewable energy credit purchases, long-term renewable energy project development, and energy savings performance initiatives. Leveraging energy savings performance contracts, or ESPCs, this is a contract that allows energy service companies to design, construct, implement, operate, maintain, and arrange the necessary funding to reduce energy and water consumption. These ESPCs can be used to replace inefficient energy and water-consuming equipment, including HVACs, lighting, electrical power generation, and renewable energy. One recent example is what we did for the Coast Guard at their training center in Petaluma. This contract is expected to create an annual savings of $1.3 million by using large solar arrays, providing 8.6 million kilowatts of electricity. Again, allowing the Coast Guard to focus on their primary mission and not having to rely on managing and overseeing installations. Third is our micro reactor program, working in close coordination with the Air Force. We recently, up in Eielson Air Force Base in Alaska, These nuclear reactors are used to produce carbon-free energy and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Recently, at the end of August, in partnership with the Air Force, DLA achieved a critical milestone in piloting advanced nuclear energy technology with the issuance of a notice to intent to award to a small business company. And finally, sustainable aviation fuels. So as everyone's aware, DLA Energy has supported critical aspects of alternative fuels, including quality tech requirements, impact assessments, R&D, and intergovernmental collaboration. We are currently supporting the Sustainable Aviation Fuels Grand Challenge through interagency and industry engagements, working closely with industry to not only develop the technology, but leverage existing feedstocks in order to support the DoD in future endeavors. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for that first round of answers. I would like to get a little more specific for each of you. So Todd, what are the key drivers of this change in battery technology, and what are the implications for DoD resilience? How quickly can we expect these new technologies to be available to make a difference?
Thanks, Guy. Great question. There are a number of key drivers, I think, that really beginning to move the domestic production of advanced batteries here in the U.S. And I think a lot of it, first and foremost, probably deals with what we see as electrification of transportation and the move from fossil fuels to cleaner, more sustainable, power sources going forward. So on the civilian side, we see the electrification of autos, trucks, and other things like that. Of course, there's a great need for batteries on that front. And like I said before, in the initial part here, we've been reliant on Chinese-made batteries for a long time. And then these batteries also use these materials and metals, nickel, manganese, cobalt, that are very expensive and hard to get from very difficult places around the world. So I think this is a critical driver. But there's also increasing need for grid applications for advanced batteries, too. We see increasing use of renewable energy and more reliable sources of domestic generation. But for those variable resources, you need battery backup because the sun's not always shining, wind's not always blowing, and so on. So that's an important driver. I think on the military front, as we touched on here already today, there's a lot of interest in base energy, especially for bases that can be islanded, that can be operational, even when the grid goes down from whether it's a man-made disaster, military attack potentially, or natural disaster. And we've seen this here domestically. So it's important for these bases to be able to operate as part of continuity, even in very difficult times. So these advanced batteries can give us that base energy independence. But there's also a host of tactical applications of the technology as well. Vehicles, and again, like I mentioned, even on the infantry side, I remember General Dempsey talked about how each, platoon or a unit carries like 400 pounds of batteries to supply our ground troops in a host of ways. That's a major burden. And if we can lighten that weight load and reduce that number of batteries and so on, then I think you can extend the life of the soldier. So there's a host of applications that are driving this greater military across the services interest in new technology. And including also, there, like I said before, it's very important to develop the domestic sources so that we have that key and that independence that and also that global competitiveness in this critical area. In terms of the time frame that we're looking at for our advanced lithium sulfur batteries, right now we're actually scaling up production in Houston as we speak. We'll be producing batteries that will be available for validation and testing next year. And then we're moving immediately to a pilot manufacturing of those batteries in 2025. And we envision being able to provide in the gigawatt level scale of batteries in 2028, 2027. So we're ramping up quickly, and our batteries will, be available real soon. And it's very important, of course, for a lot of uses of these are the batteries is to test and validate them for the particular need. So that's something that's just right around the corner.
Todd, thanks much for that. So Ben, there's a suite of energy resilient options that are available, as we've kind of heard today. What do you think some of the pros and cons of those different options are?
Thanks, Guy. I think that there, at the macro level, there, the discussion is starting to evolve around the fact that given current battery technology and even near future battery technology, the grid cannot handle, you know, full electrification at this time. So that's driving a problem to, I think, look at this suite of options and realize, you know, where are the performance characteristics that tend towards batteries versus other methods like hydrogen. Applaud Todd's initiative and absolutely agree that we should continue to improve battery technology. And largely, we feel like in Independence Hydrogen, we feel like this is a false dichotomy, right? Battery electric versus hydrogen, because you hear that being discussed a little bit. It's not an either or. It's a yes and. It's an all the above, everything included. At the micro level, to get to your specific question, Guy, it really is more about performance characteristics. And we're starting to see the commercial space come to terms with this. I attended the Advanced Clean Transportation Expo back in April, and you're seeing the heavy-duty trucking companies start to realize that the performance characteristics of hydrogen, fuel cell electric, or even internal combustion engines are better than battery electric, given current and near future battery technology, just because the weight of the battery. So anything heavy duty, heavy torque favors towards hydrogen, and you're seeing the commercial, the OEMs go that way. I'll also be the first to say that hydrogen's not going to compete anytime soon on the passenger car side. That is definitely squarely in the space of battery electric. So as it applies to DoD, I think we look at that spectrum of vehicles available out there, whether that's on installations and passenger cars that should go towards battery, forklifts in the distribution centers that trend towards hydrogen at current performance characteristics. And then you get into military vehicles, right? Do the Humvees and the tanks and the trucks out there largely would probably perform better off of hydrogen today, being that heavy duty trucking, mining, and everything else on the commercial side, it's heavy duty is going towards hydrogen.
Thanks, Ben. And Eric, I'd like to drill down a little bit more in your opening comments. Energy and fuel resilient solutions are more likely to be adopted if they provide an operational advantage. What are some of the operational advantages that alternative energy solutions may provide? And if all those advantages are realizable, what are the key challenges in getting alternate fuel technologies into the force?
Yeah, so especially as we look towards the Pacific, you know, people say that logistics will be the pacing function and fuel will be the pacing commodity. And so one operational benefit is just eliminating the need to transport fuel and propellant. So from a distributed logistics standpoint, right, hydrogen can be produced from a half dozen different energy sources, right? Natural gas, coal, municipal waste, host nation power, tactical power. You can make hydrogen from aluminum and other solid feedstocks at both the small local tactical level and at regional scales. Producing fuel so many different ways at different operational levels provides commanders and logisticians many more options for operational energy than with bulk liquid petroleum, which needs to be transported over long distances. And this, you know, enables some interesting things like low signature fuel logistics, you know, storing the feedstock in a manner that's not obviously war fuel. In terms of operational capabilities, right, hydrogen, if you rip out the battery from a battery-powered UAV and you put in a hydrogen tank and a hydrogen fuel cell, you will increase its flight time by 3 to 5x. And if you put a hydrogen fuel cell on board a petroleum platform, like a watercraft or a ground vehicle, they're about equal for civilian applications, you know, just driving on the highway. But for DoD missions, which have a lot of loitering time, a lot of, you know, silent overwatch, you can, because hydrogen fuel cells run at around 50% efficiency, even at low power levels, you can again extend their mission endurance by about 3x. And in doing so, you also reduce their thermal and acoustic signatures. In terms of propulsion and propellants, you know, tests by NASA showed that in rocket engines, hydrogen produces about 3 times the specific impulse of hydrocarbon propellants. So what that does is it enables high-speed propulsion even for small UAVs. And if you take hydrogen and oxygen and mix it, you can now combust it and provide propellant options. So in the 2000s, ONR demonstrated a combustion light gas gun, a naval gun, where they mixed hydrogen and oxygen, combusted it, and they found that hydrogen combustion provides about 30% higher muzzle energy compared to solid propellant. And that increases kinetic range by about 3x. So now if you have the ability to make your own propellant, that means for safer ammunition storage and transport, you know, eliminating the solid propellant for munitions and instead producing your gaseous propellant in the field, it also gives the ability to manufacture propellant in theater. Lastly, balloons have been used in the Civil War, in World War I and World War II, even in the Global War on Terror in Iraq and Afghanistan. And having the ability to produce your own lift gas and fill balloons in an austere manner gives even units at the tactical level the ability to launch systems that could even provide satellite level capability. So austere production of lift gas and the ability to deploy these small, small balloons or even large balloons enables some pretty interesting capabilities. So, a lot can be enabled by putting a fuel that's been used since the Civil War, putting it back on the battlefield, giving both our logisticians more options as well as our commanders more capabilities. So, all those capabilities, both logistics and operational that I described, we're hoping that they are compelling enough to motivate change, but there are a number of challenges. The biggest of which we call the supply-demand trap. At one point, I took a aluminum soda can from the Pentagon mess and turned it into hydrogen fuel on the desk of the Deputy Commandant for Installation and Logistics for the Marine Corps in about 15 minutes. And he said, "This is amazing technology." And I said, "Awesome, sir. Are you and your staff going to help us advocate for it?" He said, "Heck no." I said, "Well, why not?" And he was really thoughtful about it. He said, "I, as a logistician, I'm not going to put a new fuel on the battlefield until I see the demand signal from the platform acquisition folks." You talk to the platform acquisition folks and they see all the operational benefits and the signature benefits, but they're not going to write a requirement for a hydrogen fueled platform until they see the supply system being able to support it. So we have the supply demand trap. And the solution to that, I think, is either a senior person, saying we're going to move forward together, both the logisticians and the platform acquisition folks, or you need some independent entity to develop a systems of systems solution. And that's what we're trying to do at Mach, to provide both the fuel logistics as well as the platforms. Another challenge is the tech development process for new energy technologies, right? Energy technologies, by their very nature, are highly energy dense. Therefore, there are a lot of safety considerations, a lot of transport considerations that go into that. You look back to the combustion engines, right? The first gas turbines and gas engines were patented in the 1790s. And it wasn't until the 1870 that the first liquid fuel internal combustion engine product was available on the market. That's an 80-year time frame for new energy technology. With modern capabilities, we can go a lot faster, but getting a new energy source and squeezing enough performance out of it is a challenging proposition, requires a lot of technology development. The platform conversion is another challenge, right? We're not going to swap out the entire fleet of Army ground vehicles and convert them to hydrogen. Right, we need to be looking at low-hanging fruit where we can provide improved capabilities, things like UAVs, unmanned ground vehicles, dismounted infantry, platforms that are already electric that can be converted. And then lastly, the organizational shift going from kind of Iron Mountain logistics to distributed logistics is a complete sea change, and there's no force structure to execute that. I think broadly speaking, awareness is important, right? Energy affects the entire DoD operational enterprise, but the impact of changing pieces of the energy supply system is not well understood except, a small community of SMEs and logisticians. So, somehow we need to make the DoD become more energy literate. So there are a lot of challenges ahead of us, but, a vast, some really interesting opportunities as well.
Thanks, Eric. Okay, finally, Mr. Kless, can you elaborate more on what you're doing in installation energy in support of the executive order on catalyzing clean energy industries through federal sustainability?
Sure, thank you. As we heard from Eric, this is a great question. Because if you go on the renewable fuel side and the future, right, the time to get there and the transition of the military equipment is a significantly longer time frame. So right now, DLA Energy is focused more on the installation energy, and as everyone's aware, the executive order for carbon pollution-free energy. If you look at using the commercial market model, right, how do you aggregate demand, right, and then leverage that through economies of scale to get the best price for electricity? So I mentioned earlier, installations are challenged with funding, maintaining the bases, the installation, while at the same time, and as we've heard today, getting ready for a near-peer competitor. So DLA has been put in charge by the department to be the centralized procurement agent for electricity. Again, The focus here is looking at the energy requirements for DoD installations, aggregating that demand, and then leveraging the commercial market, allowing, you know, those scarce resources and funding to be utilized in other areas within the DoD. In addition to being the procurement agent, DLA has now been designated as the program manager for this initiative, again, focused on carbon pollution-free energy. We currently have a pilot that we are using with Duke Energy in order to support 5 bases. Again, as a pilot, we expect that to come as far as be awarded early in calendar year 24. And we're also looking at other opportunities with Florida Power and Light and Dominion Energy in Virginia. So this is really a game changer. If we can, and quite frankly, the challenge is going to be aggregating, getting the services to provide their requirement, and also, you know, combining those requirements into an overall DoD requirement. Right now, it's dispersed, and it's more of a decision of the individual installation, whether they want to go and contract on their own or use DLA for installation. So part of this is changing the culture. And again, the intent is DLA would be the procurement arm working with industry to get those economies of scale and then decentralized execution. So the installations would still continue to benefit from the lower price, but also day-to-day management of that electricity.
So thank you very much. So at the close of the podcast, I'd be remiss if I did not thank NDTA and Cypress for sponsoring this, but probably more importantly for each of you members of industry and government for taking the time to giving us a wider aperture of some of the solutions that are being done and that can be done in regard to energy resilience, both on installations and on the battlefield. So thank you very much.